Welcome back to the Skits and Giggles podcast. I'm Pascal, chief instigator of the show and your host. I'm joined by my co-host and our resident engineer, the yin to my yang, the Crockett to my Tubbs, Bryson. How's it going today, buddy?
Hey, great, Pascal. How are you?
I'm good. Today, we are rejoined by Anna Newkirk. How's it going, Anna?
I'm good. How are you guys? Excited to be here.
Dandy.
Oh, well, we're all good. Looking forward to our little catch-up today. It's been a couple of weeks. It's been a couple of months almost since the last race. So how's it been going since then?
It's been going really good. Had a nice off season, lots of hanging out, relaxing, and started training again, I think, 3 weeks ago. This is technically the third week, but I've been sick all week, so I haven't gotten much done. It's been really nice.
Okay. You've also done some traveling, I've seen on your Instagram. So how was that? I mean, obviously, it's 2021. It's always a bit challenging with international travel and such. How's that been?
Yeah, it was really good. I was in Canada in the off season for a week and a half in Bromont, which was really, really nice. It was really good time. Lots of just hanging out, lots of riding, just doing fun activities. It wasn't too difficult getting, actually, it was more difficult getting into Canada than it was getting home. I just had to get like PCR test going there, vaccination, then I got tested again when I got there, and going home, I just had to show my vaccination. So it's getting easier, thankfully. But yeah, it was a really good time. I had a blast.
Very good. So you're feeling recharged going into the off season. You say you just started training again. What's the plan for the next couple of months until Christmas and then into the new year?
Yeah, I'd say the plan for the next couple of months, is just to get hench, bulk up, obviously go on lots of rides, also do some endurance stuff, do some sprints. That's the goal for the next couple of months, just to train and get massive.
All right. Well, I mean, sounds like a plan. And then it's the Christmas break and then into the new season. But before we talk about next year, let's rewind a little bit and talk about last year. What was your thoughts on 21? How did it go for you?
It was a roller coaster of a season. I'm not going to lie. It started off not very great, especially in the downhill side of things. And it wasn't very great for the first couple of races up until Maribor. And in Maribor, I started, I guess, feeling like my old self on the bike again and started to gain some confidence. And then from Maribor on, it was actually turned out to be pretty good. And in total, I'm very content with the season.
Okay, nice. So as we learned in the first episode from earlier this year, you were finishing school this summer. And so if you want to use the Swiss rating grades, which is 6 is the best, totally mission accomplished, and 1 is not so mission accomplished, then where would you rank it?
Honestly, I don't remember. I didn't fail any classes, which is great. And I didn't finish any classes with a 6. It was all just kind of like in between the 4. Yeah, most of them were like 4.5s, couple 5s, I think like maybe 1 or 2 5.5s, but just very, very average. I finished, I made it through, which is all I really care about, to be honest.
There you go. That's the only thing ever anyone will ask you about. Have you done it? And then it's a yes and
exactly.
No, and no one asks about the grade.
Unless your grades are like super good, nobody cares.
Exactly. But if you have to look at your bike season this year, where would you rank that? Same level or a bit better?
That's a difficult question. I think it's really hard to rank it because it's so objective. I'd say I'd rank it maybe like a 4.5 out of 6, you know? Like, I passed, but like, it wasn't like perfect, you know? It wasn't like, wow, this is incredible, so good. It's like, you know, it was passed a little bit more than just passed, but there's still room for improvement and lots of room for improvement.
Okay. But what were your personal highlights this year?
I had a couple of personal highlights. I think my first personal highlight of the season was Maribor, the World Cup actually qualifying, because I didn't qualify in Leger, which was a low light. I was very gutted about that, very disappointed in myself. But Maribor qualifying was such a big relief, and it gave me, I feel like, so much confidence for the rest of the season. And yeah, that was definitely a big highlight. Obviously, Lenzerheide was also a highlight, finishing ninth, which I was very happy with.
Okay, so would you say mission accomplished for this year? I mean, I think last time we spoke, I think you set out goals, achievable goals would be like a top five or something like that. So you're slightly outside of that, but I mean, you're on a good path, I would say. How do you feel about that? Or more work to do? Always more work to do.
Oh yeah, I've definitely got a lot of work to do. I think the women's field is incredibly competitive at the moment. Like, even just compared to last year in 2019, it's like the level is so much higher. Like, for example, in snowshoe, in the bottom section, the final, that triple, that unfortunately got a lot of people out. But in 2019, there was one woman doing it. That was Marine Cabarrou. And this year, pretty much almost all the women who qualified for final were doing it. I did not do it, not going to lie. It caught a lot of people out, and a lot of people got hurt on it. And it being a doubleheader at the end of the track, I was kind of like, yay.
Let's play it safe.
I don't want to get hurt at the last, yeah, the last race of the season. Yeah, that's definitely something I also need to work on, is like big hooks like that. But yeah, back to the question, the level of competition in the women's field is incredibly high at the moment, and I've definitely got a lot of work to do before I could be up there with the, I guess, top five.
But in terms of the takeaways towards that goal from this year, do you have some good ones? What are your main things that you're going to work on over the winter?
I really need to work on, one thing I noticed is not moving so much on my bike, because watching myself, like on replays or whatever, on videos, I seem to do a lot of unnecessary movements, and I think I would be faster if I did not do that. And I don't know, I feel like just general speed, mindset, yeah, mental stuff, jumps, corners, pretty much everything. Oh, I need to ride like rounder and smoother, like actually use the whole track instead of just using part of the track, because I don't know, for some reason I tend to forget that the tracks are actually pretty wide and there's a lot of space. I'm just like, yeah, just stay here in the middle. Yeah, there's a lot to work on.
Okay, well, actually we can already throw in, we've obviously reached out ahead of our little catch-up, we reached out to friends and followers and fans of the podcast, and we actually have quite a fitting one from a friend, Domi Wittmo. That would fit in quite nicely here. And he was wondering if you analyze your riding, and if yes, how, and if not, why not? And what are you going to do to be better and faster?
I do analyze my riding, especially at like World Cups. I'll compare my GoPro footage to like other people's GoPro footage, see where I'm losing time, see where I'm gaining time, see where I can make up more time, et cetera, et cetera. And any time that I'm like, filmed, whether it just be an iPhone clip or like from live stream or whatever, I'll go over that, watch that, see how I look on the bike, see what I'm doing wrong or what I think could be better. Because I think it's, honestly, I think it's really important. It's a really good way to improve skills, is watching yourself ride. Like, obviously, filming and videos and stuff are great for social media and posting on Instagram or whatever, but they're also really good for analyzing your riding and seeing what you can improve on.
I think it's a really valid point. When I first got into biking, I watched all the, you know, the movies typical of people in the early 2000s, and you see the free riders and everything, and you're watching how they do this kind of stuff because you want to try it. And of course you go and do it and you just endo. And then you got to rewatch the video and be like, oh, I see. So he kind of did like a little pump. Yeah. And maybe you try that. And of course, it's not so fluid or majestic, but it works out and you end up landing. So I was, you know, it's pretty typical. I think a lot of people are doing this. Are you watching any other World Cup riders to see, okay, maybe I can emulate that style, or he took or she took that corner really good. Maybe I want to take it that line, but the same way, not just the same line.
Yeah, I do, definitely. Even like just before races, I'll go and watch like replays of the race. And there are certain riders who I really like to watch and like analyze their style, like Rachel Atherton. I love like watching just like the Red Bull TV replays of her in race runs, just because she's incredible on a bike. She's definitely the GOAT. And just watching her and the fact that she was able to like be at the top for so long, and you know, maybe she'll come back and do it again, but I think she's definitely one that I like to watch and like analyze her riding style, how she stands on the bike, what she does and stuff.
Yeah, lots to take away.
Absolutely. And I mean, it's you know, some of the, you know, top teams, they have their line guys and their video guys, and they're doing all the analysis and, you know, comparing the lines and checking out other riders, I've heard. And yeah, so I mean, again, you know, there's a lot of power and value in visualization and you know, putting yourself into that same position and hopefully to replicate.
Yeah,
definitely. Also, I mean, an interesting question that I've noted down for myself here is, of course, this is your first season as a full-time athlete. And, well, you've finished school, and so that obviously takes quite a bit of time. And now you're a full-time athlete. How's that changed the game for you? Is it much different, or is it you know, kind of same old?
I don't know if I'd call myself a full-time athlete yet, because I do still work on the side. But I do have a lot more time now, which I'm only starting to realize it, like, now that I'm in the off season, that I'm training again, how much more time I have. It's not just like wake up, go to school, go train, go back to school, go to work, go to bed. It's like I wake up and, you know, I can actually sleep in, can actually get like enough sleep, which is really nice. I have time to like cook better food. It's not just like pasta and pesto every day for lunch. I can actually make proper meals. I'm trying to go on longer rides. I have more time in the gym. It's everything. I just have more time to also enjoy the things that I'm doing. It's not just like, okay, I have exactly 20 minutes to get to the gym. And then to the gym, I have exactly an hour and 40 minutes to get this training done. And I have 20 minutes to shower, ride back to school. That leaves me 10 minutes to eat. Okay, and then class starts. And then I have to leave as soon as class ends and then go straight to work. And then I have 5 minutes to change or go to the bathroom, get ready or whatever, go to work, get home, eat dinner, go to bed. It's not just like, I don't know, it's way less stressful. It's so nice. I have so much time to like just enjoy things, and you know, I can take my time, and it's really nice. I'm enjoying it.
Very good. That's, you know, less stress is always, you know, beneficial and more positive undertone than just being chased by your own schedule and stressing about, you know, being on time and being somewhere at a certain point in time when you just want to sit down for 5 minutes and just chill.
Do you think that the schedule, the program that you can put together for yourself now that you don't have school and so many commitments, do you think that's going to give you a better result than when you were so pressed to have to commit to so many different things and follow through? Because you were really dedicated at that point. Like, you really showed your grit having to do school, work, train, and be a pro. You think maybe now with your improved schedule, you're going to feel more successful?
I think the lack of, or like the fact that there's less stress will definitely help. And I feel like that was also like had a big impact on my season. Like the first half of the season when I did not race very well, I was still really stressed from like just the whole, because I had a really busy spring. And looking back, I realized I was definitely a little bit stressed. I don't know how great that was, but it definitely had a big impact in my mindset and my mentality. And I don't know, it was just really exhausting. And I found it really hard to like focus and actually like, sounds cheesy, I know, but I found it really hard to believe in myself and actually like well, yeah, believe in myself. And I had like zero confidence. And then, yeah, so I think like if I'm less stressed, that'll be less of a problem. Like of, I don't know, just more, like I said, more time to enjoy things because, yeah, mindset plays a really big role in downhill, in any sport, but in downhill, it's a determining factor. And yeah, I think the lack of stress will definitely help me.
Now you have a little bit less stress. Now you have a little bit more self-confidence. It sounds like, you know, two main recipe pieces for a nice cake, I guess you would say, a race cake. You did do a Enduro World Series this year. Was that just a flash in the pan, or are you kind of, now that you're full pro, you know, are you only going to focus on DH, or are you a little bit leaning towards the enduro side? Because you're on your little bike a lot, right?
Yeah, I actually ride my enduro bike way more than I ride my downhill bike, but my heart is still in downhill. I love racing downhill so much more than I love racing enduro, which honestly, I don't love racing enduro that much. I just do it like, it's because it's a very type 2 kind of fun. It's, you know, you feel very accomplished afterwards, but it's not like downhill where you're just having fun and where it's like adrenaline rush. Yeah, I don't know. Downhill is just a lot more fun. And I think I will maybe do like just a token EWS each year. But I think downhill is definitely my main focus.
Yeah, these doubleheaders can be pretty tough.
Yeah, I wanted to get back to the doubleheaders because we, you know, of course, we talked about it a little bit before the recording. I think one of the hallmarks of the 21 calendar in both the EWS as well as the Downhill World Cup were those doubleheader formats. I think with some mixed reception. So what is the it's the first time we have the athlete perspective on this podcast. So what, how did you feel about the doubleheaders?
Well, the EWS doubleheader was definitely hard, but I think the way that they did it was really nice because we had a rest day. Well, we almost had two rest days because after the first EWS, we had like a full rest day. And then the next day was only just like pro stage, which is just one practice lap and then one race run. However, I do kind of wish that they would have changed up the stages in between the two races because first off, we'd already raced them all. And not only we'd already raced them all, but the EWS 180 guys had already raced them all. So the tracks were completely destroyed by the time we raced them the second time. And I think it just would be a bit more exciting if there were or at least if they made like little changes in the tracks and stuff like they did in the downhill World Cups. But I thought it was a good experience racing the EWS doubleheader. But I do think, I don't know, I think they could stick to just like one race per week.
You know, depending on who you talk to, I mean, of course, there's different perspectives. Of course, people are always asking for another like gnarly race like Finale was, like, you know, 6.5, 7 hour days, 2,000 meters of climbing, super long transfers and all that. So kind of the type 2 or even type 3 fun. And then, you know, between having 3-4 stages, a short pro stage, mostly uplift assisted, somewhere in between there is kind of the sweet spot of you know, what an enduro should be. And I guess, you know, as the format develops, you know, they will find that sweet spot. That, of course, at the current stage, trying to make it work for broadcast. So even maybe with live broadcasting and having a format that can be, you know, can be shown to other people, and, you know, be it as a live stream or as a, you know, TV production later on. So I guess they have to strike the balance between all those interests. But yeah, but I mean, for a good perspective on the EWS doubleheaders, I suggest you guys listen to Eddie Masters on the Downtime podcast. Great podcast, by the way. He's some interesting takes on it. But if you compare the EWS doubleheaders with the downhill doubleheaders, how did you feel about that?
I'm convinced the UCI is trying to kill us with the downhill doubleheaders. Because if one week of racing isn't hard enough, they just decided to give us no rest day at all and just, like, you know, put a second race right behind it. So right after, like, the race run of the first race, everybody was back up top walking down the track or down the new track for the second race. And then the next morning was practice, and they gave us zero recovery time. And even though we only ride downhill, it's actually quite difficult, especially for the mind. And it's, yeah, a lot of people were finding it really hard to focus, and, like, we're just so drained by the end of it, or even, like, by the first day of the second race, that it was, it was a little bit dangerous. I think it would be cool if they gave us a rest day in between. Then I wouldn't mind the format so much, but without a rest day, it's a bit
intense.
Yeah, it's very intense. I'd be fine with just one race per week.
Okay. But did you adapt your race week strategy for the doubleheaders, or do you just basically condense your strategy into two races for within a week, or what did you do?
Pretty much, yeah.
No, I was just meaning, did you maybe leave out a practice run? So rather than do, I don't know, what you do on a normal practice day, you do four or six. So then maybe
sometimes
you just do
three.
2 to 4 or whatever, just to save some energy for race day or something like that.
Yeah,
so I guess.
Yeah, actually, after the first race, I did only do 2 practice laps, just like the 2 mandatory ones. Because I was so tired that, like, I didn't even want to do more.
Oh, okay, wow. But they changed the tracks quite significantly in some spots, or at least what you could see on the live feed. Was that, you know, something that threw you off, or was it kind of just minor changes in the grand scheme of things?
Yeah, I think the changes weren't too huge. Like, it was only 2 sections that they changed in snowshoe. But it wasn't too bad, and neither of the sections, like, required great line choice. It was just, like, pretty much main line with confidence, so it was just getting used to the features and, like, the big rogue up top and stuff. So yeah, I wasn't like I liked that they changed the track. I thought it was good.
I'm no racer, but I would tend to think that if you're going to have to race almost the same track again a few days later, and of course you're already fully trained out, you gave it your all in the first one, and you got to, like, recuperate for the next and somehow manage that. It's not so much like a race strategy, but more of like an energy recovery strategy. Did you think of anything like that for the weekend, or that for that, however, 1 week that you were in snowshoe?
Yeah, definitely. I tried to get in as much recovery as I could, whether that be just, like, spinning my legs or stretching and stuff. But I didn't have, like, a mechanic or anybody there. So we were doing, like, all our own bike work, all our own shopping, all of our own cooking, everything. So we didn't have that much time to recover, but we did do a lot of sleeping. We went to bed early, or I went to bed early every night. Luckily, I was a bit jet lagged, so, like, I fell asleep at, like, 9 o'clock every night. And I think sleep was definitely a big part in recovery. And
well, it looks like you did something right, because I'm not sure if the field was exactly the same, but you moved up 2 positions on the second race.
The field was unfortunately not quite the same.
Okay.
A lot of girls crashed out.
I see.
And a lot of them didn't race, or some of them didn't race the second race. But unfortunately, there were some big crashes. Like Vero, I think if you were watching it, you guys might have seen Jess, unfortunately, had a really big crash. Monica didn't race because she had a big crash in the store. So unfortunately, it was, yeah, a lot of people crashed out.
Yeah, I mean, it looked like a gnarly, gnarly racetrack. And also on the live feed, it was like, it's pretty spicy rock sections, and then that triple at the bottom, as you mentioned, called quite a few people out, and unfortunately quite big time in some cases.
So you weren't able to bring Jules along with you, but was she was there for some of the other races, looks like?
Yeah, she was there in Leger and Maribor. No, not Maribor, sorry. Leger and Lanzerheide. Unfortunately, she cannot go to Maribor, but yeah, it's always a really big help when she's there. Obviously, I'm not the best mechanic. Like, I can get most stuff done, but she does it a lot better than me. And it also just takes a lot of weight off my shoulders.
I pronounced it wrong, didn't I? It's Eula.
It's Eula, but Jules is fine too.
Yeah, well, you know, with my Canadian accent, eh? And then looks like you're racing a lot with Abby. And yeah. Then one time she pipped you. Was it the IXS Cup?
The IXS Cup, nice. In Maribor. Yeah, I know. I was really stoked for her. We battle each other a lot.
Yeah.
We push each other a lot.
That's progression.
Yeah, definitely. We go to a lot of the races together too. So it's always, it's a good time. Mm. Yeah. But yeah, I was really stoked for her. She was riding really well that week, especially like in the wet in Maribor because it started raining like on race day right before our race run. So it was just like completely soaked
run.
But she rode really well.
Did she lean over on the podium and say, sorry for partying?
She actually said exactly those words.
I knew it.
How did you know?
I put her up to it.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Last time we spoke, we talked a bit about visualization, and we just went over the topic of checking out your video and some of the helmet cam and also some of like the kind of third party footage of you riding and other riders, of course. And how's it going with the visualization process, the feeling out the track through your mind? And are you still carrying on with that technique, or is it developed a little bit, put it to the side? What's going on?
No, yeah, that's still going good, going strong. I've actually added another, I don't know, I guess this is a visualization session to my warm-up routine. So now once when I'm in the lift going up, I'll visualize everything, my running the track and stuff. And then like, I don't know, usually like 15 minutes before my race run, sometimes 20, I'll go through it again in my head.
Okay. So you got a pretty dug in there.
Yeah. That very important part of warming up.
One of the sore points that I had when we had our first talk was you didn't want to reveal any of your sponsors. And I was trying to nudge you and try to get you to say something. But now it looks like from the social feeds and some of the pictures I've seen, like on Roots and Rain and stuff, you got a nice kit. You're pretty sponsored up. So you want to talk a little bit about it?
Yeah. So this year I've been riding for Unic Racewear, and I'm not going to lie, I'm really happy with it. Like, first off, it's really comfortable. The pants are like the most comfortable riding pants I've ever worn. And they do like completely custom stuff. So they helped me like design my own stuff. And well, they designed it for me. And I just said what I liked. Oh, but nice. It's really cool. And yeah, I gave them some input. And I'm really happy with how everything turned out. Really stoked to be working with them.
Brings us back to looking good is feeling good, and feeling good is riding good.
Exactly. Look good, feel good, ride good.
Yeah, I'm glad you got a bunch of good sponsors on board. It's definitely a help, as you said before.
I hope they got the worst out of it. I was really happy with all my sponsors this year. They're, yeah, really great people, really great brands, and it's all, I don't know, it's all just really good stuff. I was surprised myself about how it's like, I feel like in all of the areas, it's like the best of the best, like Tires, Maxxis, Wheels, DT Swiss, Canyon, Bell, Oakley. It's all like, you can't get much better than that. So I'm very happy.
Some of these brands I've ridden and some of those brands I've not ridden. Would you say like you were really proud of yourself or going after it and trying to get these specific brands? Like, you know, you have to go out there and find these sponsors and kind of do this yourself as a privateer. You know, for myself, if I were to get sponsored, yeah, I'd feel like super stoked because then I'm getting these people who are like believing in me. So how does it make you feel?
Yeah, it makes me feel really good. I think sponsorship's a funny thing because it makes it a lot easier if you already know the people, and I already knew a lot of the people and had like existing relationships with them. But I think it's really, really cool when the people and the brands actually believe in you and they tell you that. And yeah, it's definitely a big motivating factor. And yeah, I think it's really cool. Very exciting.
Well, I mean, that's a great segue for 22. I don't know if you can talk about any of the of your program in terms of sponsors and all that. If you don't want to, that's fine. But in terms of the race program, I mean, there's of course, there's a lot of exciting stuff happening both in downhill and there's an enduro. There's an exciting season shaping up. We also have another listener question from Gianluca Hulny, who's one of the guys behind the Swiss Enduro Series. He also wants to know, are we going to see you somewhere in Switzerland racing? Apart from Lenzerheide at the World Cup.
Yeah, I'd really like to do one of the Swiss Enduro Series. I wanted to this year, but they didn't really line up with the other races. I could have gone to Lichtental, but I was already in off-season mode then. But yeah, I'd really love to race one. It looked like a really good time. Looked like a lot of fun. That's definitely on the list.
Cool. I mean, again, you know, I did both of the races this year in Lenzerheide and Lichtental. Both of them were super cool. Cool tracks, super organization, you know, pretty clear where do you need to be, when, and just cool vibes and really a good time. But the rest of the program, usual World Cup and a bit of EWS or some crankworks again?
Yeah, I'll definitely be focusing on World Cups. I would absolutely love to race some crankworks events. I love crankworks. Crankworks events are so much fun. You got so many events and so many disciplines, and it's really, really good time. Everybody's just there to have a good time and hang out and race. And yeah, I would love to do some more crankworks events, and I'll probably do my annual EWS. Not sure which one yet, but okay. I'll probably do one.
Is it your last season as a U21, or are you full-time elite now?
Oh, full-time elite next year. Rough.
Rough. Very rough. But yeah, I mean, it's there's so much to choose from next year. And yeah, I hope that the pandemic situation is kind of chilling out a little bit. Doesn't look like it right now, but you know, from whatever the plans are, they look pretty interesting. You know, good challenge to put a cool program together.
Yeah, I'm really excited for next year. I think it's gonna be a cool year, I hope.
One thing we also talked about last time is you doing some coaching and working together with the guys from Pump Track Mutants. We also had them on the podcast, as you may or may not know. Two of the guys, they are old friends of mine. They as from swimming, so I knew them pretty well. So that lined up pretty nicely. The idea was that you do some coaching on their pump track days and kind of training days. Did that go ahead?
Yeah. So once a week on Saturdays, I'll coach a group of kids. It's a really good group. They're all really respectful, really good riders, and it's a lot of fun for me. Yeah, I really enjoy doing that. It's a really good group of people.
Okay. And are you doing some more next year, or are you just sticking to the once a week kind of schedule?
It's a secret. I'm planning some cool stuff and you'll hear about it soon. Like and subscribe. Follow for more.
Okay. We also have some more listener and friends and family questions. One of them being Bennett, your brother.
Oh no!
He mentioned. I mean, there's a whole list of questions. He also mentioned that you have now the official bike guide certification. Is that related to the pump track project, or also more secret stuff that will be announced soon?
Well, it's not a bike guide certification. It's just coaching. I'm a certified coach for people in between 10 and 20 years old. Yeah, which is really cool. So I can do some more coaching, do some more like trainings and camps and stuff, which is exciting.
Okay. Specifically for mountain biking or across the board? So like BMX and pump track and...
Well, for cycling, I think. I'm not going to do any road classes. or track. I think that's a different, it's mountain biking, but like mountain biking and pump track.
It's not
stuff.
Your core competency.
No. I've ridden the road like maybe 10 times in my life and usually on a gravel bike.
Or transfer stage.
Or yeah. Or just like on my enduro bike riding over to the trails because I have to ride like 20 minutes of tarmac just getting there and like 40 minutes getting home.
How are those intervals doing?
Ugh, I hate intervals. They're doing good. I just started training again, so I haven't done that many. But yeah, still hate them as much as I did before, but they're very important. Also, I don't know, they're kind of fun sometimes because like sometimes I like to suffer, but it's a love-hate relationship, mainly just hate.
I don't know. It sounds like they kind of like them a little bit more this year.
I don't know. I think some, it's really, I like it when like I really get in the zone, when I get really focused. Yeah, sometimes I'll do them on the indoor trainer and I'll watch like, I really like watching Fast Life while I do intervals. I don't know why, but it's just really motivating for some reason. And it's entertaining and I don't get bored and it's like kind of hypes me up for it.
It's also a cool show.
Yeah, it's got great narration.
I think they did a really good job with it. I think they should sell it to Netflix. Kind of like Drive to Survive, but downhill. Although I don't know if I think they should. But I was thinking about that. What if? I don't think anybody like would watch it.
There's a very successful, it's not called a reality TV show. It's basically a documentary kind of similar to Drive to Survive about the Movistar road team. Unfortunately, it's only in Spanish with subtitles, but from what I hear, it's very good and very well made and with a lot of drama. And of course, all these characters are coming through. And then throughout the years, people that have watched it, they've obviously engaged a lot more with the team and shown interest in the team and all that sort of stuff. So exactly what you want to do. And I think, certainly Red Bull through the TV channel is doing a great job with some of those formats. I mean, obviously Fast Life is one of them. There's the one about enduro that's also a couple of seasons. And personally, I like MotoSpy. So those things, they're really cool. They're like 15 minutes or whatever. And some good, easy entertainment.
Yeah, there's like a lot more, like shows like that coming out in mountain biking, like with the Pink Bike Academy. Stuff like that.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Not gonna lie, kind of my guilty pleasure. Kind of enjoy watching it. I hate to admit it, but it's pretty entertaining.
It's so good.
And I think it opens up some good opportunities for people. Like last year, there were people who I was like, yeah, they deserve it. But this year, there are like, especially two people who I'm like, yeah, it would be really cool if they got a deal because they otherwise wouldn't. And I think it could really open up opportunities for people. And I don't know, just kind of entertaining.
For sure. And, because on the one hand, it feels like super serious TV. And then on the other, you kind of feel like it is a bit of a piss take on a lot of these reality TV formats. And that's, I think, what makes it so entertaining.
Yeah, I know. But I hate admitting that I find it entertaining because it's like, you're not supposed to like reality TV, especially like mountain biking reality TV. It's like, no, I don't like that. But unfortunately, I'm easily entertained and I quite enjoy watching it.
I think it's got a great story. It's, mountain bike reality television and just mountain bike television has come a long way. I remember pretty much the only show I used to watch was Drop In. So that was like the early Pink Bike days for video content. And it wasn't even hosted on the website until years after it was finished. And it was basically just guys hanging out, saying kind of strange things and riding pretty good. But like, it wasn't kind of curated and, there was no glamour at all. It was like kind of, if I can say it, scumbag mode. But I looked up to it. It was awesome.
Kind of like the Atherton Project. I loved watching that. That was like, I don't know, when I was young, I was short. I still like watching it, but I like watched all of it. I love watching it so much. It inspired me so much to like just go out and ride and like be fast. I don't know. Yeah, very entertaining.
Well, if it gets you out of bed every day, gets you into the gym, it can't be a bad thing, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Hey, Anna, in Leger, you didn't manage to qualify. What was your nail color?
I thought you said this would be lighthearted. I don't remember.
Oh.
I think it may have been red, but maybe gray. I don't know. It's usually like one of three colors. It's usually red, gray, or black, or white, but it wasn't white. I think it was red, but I don't think that had anything to do with it. I think I didn't qualify just because I was too slow. I also had to pass somebody in my run, but even if I didn't, unfortunately was too slow there.
Okay. Well, we have a follow-on question from the first episode, and one guy on Instagram wants to know if the favorite mud taste has changed. We obviously had some wet and muddy races this year. Last time it was Val di Sole because of the pizza tasting mud. And now it's the Leger baguette tasting mud.
Honestly, I didn't taste that much mud this year.
Okay, that's good. That's a result.
Yeah. Yeah, it was probably the Val di Fossa mud because I had two huge OTPs there. But other than that, I think I only crashed in Leger, which for me is like super weird because normally I crash like 5 times per race. But I had very few crashes. I had like lots of moments, definitely hit some trees and got folded in my bike, but never like actually hit the ground other than in Leger and Val di Fossa. Well, I also hyperextended my leg one time on a jump, but it was weird. I like landed with my leg straight and kind of, I don't know. Anyways, I didn't taste that much mud this year, but the best tasting mud this year was Val di Fossa. But in total, it's Val di Sole, definitely.
Okay, good. So that still stands.
Still pizza flavored or what?
Still pizza. Oh. Well, I don't know. I didn't taste it this year.
This year it was very dusty.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh. Well, then it must be still pizza flavored. It's not going to change so easily. So Anna, last time we talked about how you have a couple of bike riders in your family and Bennett being one of them. Fast dude.
Yes.
Wild on a bike. But he stepped away from racing and you kept going. I caught up with him just shortly and asked him, hey, you know, why was it? Because we didn't really get the story from Anna. And I guess, you know, I'm not going to paraphrase or whatever, but just to sum it up, it wasn't where he wanted to take himself at the time. But he's really lucky to have done it because it allowed him to find what he loves so much about riding. And he came back to it. So now he's been in the industry actually working and loves riding his bike now. Are you riding with him a little bit?
Yeah, I go riding with him occasionally. He doesn't ride that much, especially when it's winter and rainy. He might get mad at me for saying this. He's a bit of a fair weather rider. But yeah, I do enjoy riding with him. It's also a bit frustrating because he never rides, and then he'll get on the bike and like manual down the whole road, and I'll be like, I ride every day and I can't do that. But yeah, I do enjoy riding with him when he goes and rides.
Maybe he's just a little bit over respectful to the trail crew, you know. He just wants to make sure he's not making it any worse. Could be.
Let's go with that.
Well, let's go with that, yeah.
But funny enough, at the same time as Bryson was reaching out to Bennett, I was also reaching out to Bennett for some more lighthearted inputs. And I think we just pick up two of those. And one of them is we should be discussing where you want to live. So obviously you live in the best place on earth. So
Basel,
Rien, my hometown.
Rien.
And so A, why would you want to change? And B, where else would you go?
I would want to change because I can't afford to live in Rien by myself. First off, it's mainly just like family homes. There aren't really any like 1 or 2 bedroom apartments. It's mainly just like townhouses or like bigger apartments.
Suburbia.
Suburbia of Basel. I could see myself living in a big variety of places. I wouldn't mind living in Basel. I wouldn't mind living somewhere in Austria, like Innsbruck, I think would be really cool because you have like a really cool city, good university, mountains. I would love to live in Canada. I think it's a cool place. Yeah, like BC, I think would be really cool. Squamish, but I hear that's also pretty expensive there. But, you know, if
it's
I were...
not cheap.
Yeah, but if I were rich, you know, I might move there. Also, if I weren't
crazy. You
can
dream. You can dream sometimes.
Exactly. Exactly.
You can do the old-fashioned way. Just live the dirtbag lifestyle.
Exactly. That's
bike
true.
Bum. With two bikes.
Live in a van or something.
Whistler bike park.
No car, no fun, no money for food, but two sick bikes.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I don't get too, like, I don't see myself ever being, like, bound to one place. Yeah, I don't see myself just staying in one place for the rest of my life. Like, there's so many cool places and different places that I'd love to live. And I don't mind. I don't think I'd mind moving around a bit.
Oh, for sure. I mean, for the record, I haven't lived in Rien for longer than I have lived there. So
traitor.
That should tell you something.
Traitor.
I know. Okay. And that's some good insight. And the other thing I wanted to touch on was there is a story about a cat and a story about Slovenia. Go.
Yes. Now we're getting to the most important part of the podcast. You talk about my cat. Oh, when we were in Maribor, there was this little tiny stray kitten at the our accommodation, which was, it wasn't like in the city. It was in like kind of in the forest. Outside of the city, but sorry, I really have to cough.
At which point, Anna broke out into the gnarliest coughing fit we've ever heard. She herself described it as
casually dying in the middle of a podcast.
But she was fine in the end. Back to the story.
Then we were in Maribor in our apartment, well, the house, in the middle of the forest. There was a stray kitten, and he was super small, and he'd always run away with from us. He was super scared of us. So like, I love cats. I'm a big cat person. I was like, oh, I have to pet this cat at least once. So I'd always like, we'd always just leave bowls of milk out for him. You know, just in case he got hungry, because obviously he was a stray. He was very small and malnourished and skinny, and he didn't seem to have a mom. And so we just leave like milk and stuff out. And then one day he got trapped inside of our house because for some reason he was just, I don't know, hanging out in there. And then so we had to, I don't know, we had to find him. He kept like running away from us. Eventually we got him out. And then on our last day of the stay, I was out racing. But some other people were back at the house. And finally the kitten came around while I wasn't there and started hanging out with everybody. And I was like, oh, dang it. I was so, well, obviously I was focused on the race, but I was so disappointed. And then when we got back that evening, he was, you know, just hanging out, and he like came up to us. He started trusting us, and I don't know, he just wouldn't leave us alone. And we were like, ah, what do we do with this guy? And so we just left him for the night. He stayed around for the night, and the next morning when we had to leave, we were like, so what do we do with him? And so I called my parents, I texted them, I was like, yo, can I bring this stray kitten home from Slovenia? And at first they were like, we don't know about this. Because, well, at that time, my other cat, Steve, had just ran away. He's fine. He's back now. He just got like trapped in a warehouse, we think, because we have like a warehouse right next to our house. He just got trapped there for a couple of nights, but he's fine.
Steve.
They were super worried about him. Gosh, yeah, right? Gosh darn Steve. But eventually they said yes. So we went to the pet shop, bought him a cage, and then smuggled him across borders. And we actually got, because technically you're not supposed to smuggle cats across borders unless they have passports. And we got checked, we got stopped at the first border crossing into Slovenia. I don't know if I should be talking about this on a podcast, but yes, we got stopped at the first border into Slovenia, and the dude came up to me. He was like, we had to show our IDs, passports. He asked where we were going. I was like, oh, we're just going home. He's like, when you're in the van, I'm like, oh, just bike stuff. And the cat was like right next to the, the back passenger side door. And he was like, can I open this door? And I'm like, no, but you can open up the back door. And he was like, okay, sounds good. So he walked around, opened up the back door. I walked around with him. I'm like, yeah, nothing to see here. Just bikes, bike stuff. And then he's like, all right, have a good day. And so, yeah, the fact that he didn't think it was suspicious that I said he couldn't open up that door, but he could open up the back door, is a little bit alarming, considering he is, you know, that should be an instant red flag. But yeah, and so then, yeah, all the rest of the borders went smoothly, didn't get stopped one other time, and now he's getting super big, and he's very healthy and very crazy. All he does is run around and terrorize people, but he's super sweet, and he loves being around people. Like, he can never be alone. He just always has to be around people, and he's super, he's a sweet cat. He's really cool. I'm really glad that we brought him back.
That's a great rescue story. Yeah. But what does Steve think of him?
Steve likes to be by himself. But his name, by the way, the kitten's name is Machka, which means cat in Slovenian. Creative, I know. And Machka's like crazy and loves to play. And Steve likes to be on his own and doesn't like to play too much. So anytime Machka will come up to play with him, Steve will just hiss at him, which, not like in a mean way. He doesn't mind Machka. He doesn't mind being around him and stuff, but he just doesn't like to play, so he'll just hiss at him.
It's kind of like that, I like you when you're over there.
Exactly. Or when you're not, like, playing with my tail or hitting me and bugging me.
That's a great cat story.
Thank you.
All right. I guess that's the end of the listener questions. There was actually quite a few more, but most of them we covered in the first episode. So if you guys haven't listened to that, you can find it on our website. You can find it on Apple Podcasts. You can find it on Spotify, YouTube, wherever else you listen to podcasts. Anna, is there anything else you wanted to talk about?
Yeah, actually, how do I find you guys on social media?
Ah, funny you should ask. I was just about to do the ending credits today. You know, before we wrap it up, let's just briefly do our spiel with our social, where you guys can find more information about the Skids and Giggles podcast. We are currently most active on our Instagram, where you can skid right into our DMs and follow along at Skids and Giggles. And you can find our website with all the relevant links and info under the URL skidsandgiggles.com. Also, if you guys like what we're doing and want to know what's up, just give us a follow on Spotify, hit subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you listen to great podcasts. Well, with that, I think we really wrap it up. Anna, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Bryson.
Pleasure as always.
And I hope to see you soon. Bye, guys.
Ciao.